Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello. Hello and welcome to episode 127 of the Self-Help. I know, we don't look old enough, do we? The Self-Help Podcast.
I do.
Yes, but yeah, you do actually. Finally starting to show it, and yeah, it would happen in the end. I'm Edward Lamb, and the guy whose notepad has just fallen off the arm of his chair is Sean Orford, world-famous psychotherapist. How are you doing, Sean? We're getting there.
I'm stunning. I'm fine. I'm good. I'm cool. I'm groovy. I'm not fatigued.
Bloodshot eyes showing you slightly. Yeah, you're just running out of steam.
Do you think? Nah, I'm cool. I'm good.
You're okay. You're okay.
I'm good.
Yeah. This week we're talking about overprotective parents and the issues that that can cause, because we've had a listener email in with a pretty cool, well, not cool story, but basically explaining her life, yeah, and how her childhood kind of has affected her later on. She thinks we're going to come try and get to the bottom of it for her, aren't we, Sean?
Yep. I think that every parent affects their children, either consciously or unconsciously.
Well, it's kind of the job. It's our job as parents to do that, isn't it? It's tricky to do the right, know what the right thing to do is.
Or as is it Philip Larkin, the poem, they fuck you up, your mum and dad. They don't mean to, but they do.
All right. Yeah. Short and sweet poem.
No, it goes on for that. It goes on to say, and you do the same thing in your turn as well.
Yeah, okay.
So we're all doing it, you know.
Yeah, we'll get onto that. Liveinthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links, other bits and bobs about what we do and what else. You can. There's plenty more stuff on the website. Almost endless amount of self-help advice. We've been dishing out for years, haven't we, Sean?
Yeah.
How are you doing there? You okay?
I'm good. I am my usual fatigue self.
Have you seen James Bond yet?
No, but I want to.
Spectre. Yeah, I wonder what his parents were like. I think it's been alluded to maybe in Skyfall, the kind of upbringing he had. Because they're trying to build all that character in now into these new movies, aren't they?
But who's going to be the new James Bond when he's done?
I'm in line. Watch this space.
I'm watching it.
Well, I'm blonde. Craig, what's his name? Daniel Craig is blonde. He was a blonde Bond.
I think it's about time we had a black Bond.
He was from the Wirral. He's from Hoylake. I'm from Bebbington.
I think it's about time we had a James Bond of African descent. I think we should blow the mist.
Black Bond. Yeah. Who's the guy that plays Luther in the TV show?
Yeah, it's cool.
He would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Someone's been saying we should have a gay Bond. I don't know how campy we'd have to be.
Well, I'm shaken, not stirred. You mean that guy?
Oh man, there'd be all sorts of jokes, wouldn't there? Flipping it could be a parody done actually, but let's not get too deep into that. I haven't seen either yet. I'm gonna wait for the crowds to die down, then go and have a look. Some good films coming out there, because then the Star Wars out.
December,
just before Christmas. There's a Steve Jobs flick coming out. There's one.
Oh right, yeah. There's the stories. Yeah, they did a documentary on them the other day on the TV, which was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think the film will be very good. It's a Danny Boyle movie, and I love Danny Boyle.
Mm-hmm.
But from the Johnny Ive, who worked alongside with Steve Jobs as the designer, says he's seen the film and doesn't recognise the character at all. So I don't know whether to watch it or not. I think we're going to have to, really. But
maybe we have to watch it and just realise that it's going to be partly fiction.
Yeah, like Social Network. Have you seen that with the Facebook story? Which I believe that's pretty much not all that accurate, but it's a good old yarn.
A good yarn, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Right, this week we're talking about overprotective parents. I'm going to quote an email we've had from a very dear listener of ours called Kari. Kari. K-A-R-Y, what do you reckon?
Kari. I go Kari.
Kari. Who lives in Buenos Aires, grew up in Ecuador, but has lived in Buenos Aires, for 5 years now.
Mm.
Had a lovely email from it, exchanged a couple back and forth, and she suggested an episode which we're going to go into, and this is what she said. My parents always overprotected me. They never let me go to on school trips or take me to dance classes, go out with friends, nothing like that. And just like that, they left me here alone. I think she left home at the age of about 17, went off to college, kind of just chucked herself out there in the real world. The point is, I feel so anxious, and that gets me thinking of every single move I make, every word I say. So you must imagine how many thoughts I have in my head. And that makes me feel exhausted, so exhausted that sometimes I don't feel awake or real anymore. She's had some antidepressants from a doctor, but she thinks that there must be something else that she can do, which I'm sure there will be, that we will come on to, Sean. She regrets things from her past, and she's constantly thinking of it, so she needs help. So, Carrie, sorry, but I'm sorry I've got your name wrong probably twice. But thanks so much for emailing, because I think this is a big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because everything we do stems back to that, those first initial years of our lives, don't
they? Yeah. I think that the statement that I would make as a headline on this is that if you overparent a child, you actually disable that child. That child becomes as disabled as if you had taken its legs away. Mm-hmm. And I think Carrie is kind of identifying that in the email.
Yeah.
I think that overparenting goes two ways. Have you ever heard of TA, transactional analysis?
No.
It's a psychological model where you look at a person in terms of inside them, there are three bits. There's a parent, an adult, and a child. And the parent bit of your personality can either be a critical parent or it can be a nurturing parent. The adult is the bit where you want to be. You want to be able to function as an adult. And the child part of you is the bit of you that is either a damaged child and is hurt and can't function properly, or it's a playful child that's kind of easy and loose. You know?
Okay.
And you get angry children and, you know, anxious children and that kind of stuff that are within us. But we've got these bits inside us. And they very much reflect the way that we were brought up. So that if, as a child, we weren't allowed to play and be free because we were overprotected by this critical internal parent, that were external parent, that's become an internal parent, we then get to a point where we don't allow ourselves to play. We don't allow ourselves to be free because we're critical of ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
And very often, when you're in a situation, as Carrie describes, where the parenting has actually stunted who you are, has stunted your growth and your development, left you feeling anxiety when you're trying to do things and go out and get on with your life, you have to reparent. And sometimes if you're really, really lucky, and I was really, really lucky because I was reparented, but in the monastic kind of community.
I'm going to say, your dad had quite an impact on you, didn't he?
Yeah.
But you got out there pretty early on.
Yeah, I got out early. And eventually I found people who gave me other models of what it was like to be a male, to be an adult, to be a parent.
Didn't charge you for it either.
It's very good. Worth every penny, but I didn't pay you. That kind of thing is so important. But if you can't find someone out there to reparent you, you have to reparent yourself. You have to use that internalised parent and stop being critical and stop reciting, well, if you go out there, you're going to get hurt. If you go out there, it's going to be dangerous. If you go out there, yeah. So that we develop this anxiety all the time. We have to change that parental voice in our head.
Right.
You know, we reframe it into things like, you know, I'm safe, I'm secure, I'm happy, I'm cool, I'm groovy.
Yep.
Yeah. I know I'm kicking this in a bit early, but one of the resources I've stuck in is a book which is an absolute classic by Susan Jeffers, who's sadly now gone on to the library in the sky. But she wrote a book primarily for women, but works for everybody, called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Okay.
And I love it. It's a great book, should be a classic of all time, and it's that issue about, yes, this is scary, yes, this makes me anxious, yes, I'm terrified, okay, now let's go and do it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and like relearn, reparent yourself, reframe those negative voices inside you. So very, very important, you know?
Okay. It's tricky. I mean, I'm a parent of two young lads, one of whom could probably do quite a bit if I let him, like, as in get to the local corner shop, probably even make it to school if he really put his mind to it. There's a couple of roads to cross, but he could probably make it. But obviously the fear as a parent of not wanting to be hurt or not wanting to be pinched, that's the ultimate, obviously, terror for any parent. But these things are, we get reminded of them so often, don't we? I was on the way here to see you tonight in the car, And the Madeleine McCann case is mentioned again because the police are starting to scale back the resources they're throwing at that case. It's like, it sends shivers down my spine, you know, that case. And they're very few and far between, aren't they? But they're so widely spread and shared. They make us fearful to do anything.
And I think that's the issue, is that it's not what happens, it's the way the media inundates us with this stuff. And it's like the Madeleine McCann stuff is awful. And there's no way that you could pretend that it was okay. It's not, it's bad. The button is how many hundreds of thousands or millions of children have been out, or their parents have been around the corner, or they've been out doing stuff, who haven't been abducted, who haven't been taken away.
Yeah.
And because this happens to one person, it has such a global effect. And when you get this... this shutting down. There's loads of things that follow from that. You inhibit children's learning. You know, they don't learn things because you're ever protecting them. They don't actually learn how to look after themselves, how to function. In the end, you decrease people's happiness. You get rid of their confidence. Yeah. And ultimately, you stunt their growth as people.
Yep.
And I think that we, particularly at the moment, are developing children who do not go out and interact, who do not go out and play in ways that previous generations have done. Mm-hmm. And sitting in a room, you may have really good thumbs where you can interact with your device on the internet, but you're not interacting with people, you're not getting direct experience, you're not learning life skills.
Yeah, sure, but even then online, you know... I'm not really at the stage where Will, or obviously not Jacob either, is kind of interacting with... I mean, he's decent on an iPad and he can find his way around Netflix and the BBC iPlayer app to find what he's after. But he's not like on chat forums or anything where, again, those mysterious figures who are lurking, waiting to take photos and stuff and meet up with him. Even online, you know, we're super wary, aren't we, of what we let our kids do and see. Which just is a reflection of offline behaviour as well, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just read a couple of weeks ago an article which I knew would come in handy on this show, on theatlantic.com, which I will link to in the show notes, of course, and it's about why Japanese kids can walk to school alone. And I don't know what the situation, Kerry, is like in South America, because obviously there's cultural differences here, but apparently in Japan it's much more commonplace to see kids... 8, 9, even younger, on the bus, on the train, on their own, going to the shop on their own, and they're encouraged to go out on their own because parents, I don't know how widespread it is, want their kids to learn to be independent, and they know that they can rely on other people in the community to help them on their way if they get lost, or if they don't know where the rice is in the shop. I'm not saying Japanese people eat lots of rice. Maybe they do. They do. But anyway, there's a really cool TV show which has been running in Japan for 25 years, which I can't remember the name of. But basically, it's just a film crew following kids around of the age of like 4 or 5 and a bit younger sometimes, doing tasks. So this is set a task by a mum or dad to go out, go to the local shop, and a film crew films them on the way, like from afar. And it's so cool. Apparently, this has been running for years, and I'll put a link up on. For one of them on YouTube, which you can watch, and there's loads of them. If you look in the related videos, there's loads of them which they're such good fun. But it's just.
But isn't that the way that it should be?
Yep. I can't see us overcoming that in our part of the world anytime soon. It would need such a shift, even for me to do it, you know, and I would encourage Will to. But if I saw a kid 3, 4, 5. Out walking on his own or on the train on his own, I'd probably be thinking, where's that kid's parents, you know? So,
But you can easily go up and just check a kid, can you? You know, you all right? Your kid?
Yep.
Yeah, and that's good. That's us as a group of people actually looking after each other.
Yeah.
That's the bit, you know, if you look after each other, everything's okay. Is it this programme?
Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Japanese kids go shopping.
That might be the episode I've seen, actually, yeah. Super, it's like a brother and a sister, and the older brother's actually getting quite upset, and she's kind of trying to calm him down. It's okay, I'll look after you, it's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'll put it up.
Yeah.
Moving on to Kerry's problem, then, because too late to go back, rewind, and reset her parents' behaviour.
But you can reset it. You can. What you have to understand is, and this is true for all of us, is that the people that we are, what we've learned to be, we are the habits that we've learned. And anxiety, concern, worry, lack of confidence, they're all habits. They're not kind of definitive states that we're in. And we can change them because they're learned.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to change and you want to learn, that's okay. The issue only ever is, what is it that you want? What do you want? How do you want to learn? How do you want to change? How do you want it to be different? Because that's all you need. And if you can do that, then things are fine.
Mm.
Yeah. People talk about psychotherapy these days, and people talk about CBT, which isn't really psychotherapy. It's more like more of a mechanical thing. When people need this kind of reparenting stuff, the kind of therapy that's most effective is something that's called psychodynamic.
Okay.
Which comes from an analytical school, and it's a longer form of therapy, and it involves forming quite a deep relationship with the therapist, and in that relationship, as is formed, a lot of reparenting goes on. And then you get to the point where you detach, and you detach from the therapist positively.
Yep.
So that you can go off into the world as in your own right and do stuff.
Cool.
And it may be that someone's in therapy for a year or maybe a bit longer sometimes.
Mm.
It seems like a long time. But when you're trying to relearn habits that have been with you for many, many years, you've been reinforcing them for many, many years, it takes a bit of time to do it.
Of course, as with all the things we talk about.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can reparent yourself.
Yeah.
Even if you've... Yeah. Liar.
Yeah.
It's not too late.
No, all it creates is willpower. In the analytical school, they very often say that you shouldn't take people into analysis once they get like kind of 65 up, you know, because they're so fixed and all that. And I don't buy that. I mean, I've seen people of all ages do amazing things and change things and develop and grow in all kinds of ways.
Yeah.
It's important that we don't think that, well, because I've been like this for so long, I'm stuck with it. You're not. You never are. You can always change it if you want to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I mean, yeah, Kerry's also mentioned that antidepressants have been prescribed, which we don't want to obviously override that in any way because we don't know the full details.
But the problem that you have, again, is that antidepressants were designed... if someone is clinically, if they have a clinical problem, like someone has diabetes, then you give them medication and they have to have the medication because the system doesn't work properly. You will get some people who are clinically depressed who need regular medication to regulate the system.
Okay.
But the majority of people, it's not like that. The majority of people take the medication. And what the medication does is it lifts you up. The medication lifts you up like a pit prop. It holds you up as long as you do the psychotherapy underneath, so that when you come off the medication, you don't bomb because you've replaced the medication with the learning, with the psychotherapy.
Okay, cool.
And the problem for lots of people in our current medical system is they get prescribed this stuff, which is useful in the short term, but you're stuck on it then. You're not addicted to it, but you're emotionally dependent on it. Because if you take it away, you bomb. Yeah?
Okay.
So, yeah, I'd say to carry on taking the medication. That's great. But get yourself a good therapist, either someone who does TA, which is transactional analysis, or somebody who does psychodynamic counselling. And it may be that you have to kind of hunker down and do it for a while. And maybe that does mean a year, maybe longer in therapy. But if it changes your life and it gives you back your confidence and your sense of self and your sense of purpose and allows you to get on and be dynamic in your life, it has to be an investment that's worth making.
It's worth it, man. Yeah, yeah. I mean, people wouldn't think twice about going to the gym for a year or 2 years if they were trying to lose weight, would they? So
yeah.
Put the same amount of time and effort into your...
It's like an emotional gym, isn't it? Same stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Brain training. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with that completely. If you are a parent, one of the things that I hate, it's when you get an advert, and I think it's Detox, and it says, and it kills 99% of all known germs. If you kill 99% of all known germs, how the hell are your children ever going to build an immune system?
Mm.
Yeah, we keep people in these environments that don't relate to nature, and then wonder why when people go outside they get ill.
Yep.
You know, it's like you have to build your immune system. Let your kids go out and play. Let them get dirty.
Damn, you know? Right.
Yeah, and you've got to eat a peck of dirt before you die.
Let them fall out of trees and break bones and all that stuff.
But it's living, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, some children will be maimed and some children will be killed. Some adults will be maimed, some adults will be killed. It's, you know, because people crash cars and have accidents and hurt themselves, do we all stop driving cars?
Mm.
You know, how many people on motorbikes break bones in serious ways? Actually, relative to the amount of people that drive motorbikes, not very many.
Sure.
But it looks quite spectacular when it happens.
It does, as many YouTube videos will show you.
Yeah. Yeah, but yep. I again, YouTube, the news, let's distort what's going on here, you know?
Big time, yeah. There's a video, School of Life video, about a psychotherapist called Donald Winnicott. I think I mentioned him before. I think he was active in the 50s, 60s
yeah.
in England.
Winnicott,
in
very UK. Famous. Very famous school of psychotherapy.
Worked a lot.
Winnicottian ideas.
By the sounds of it, about how to look after children, wrote quite a lot about parenting and that kind of thing, about not inhibiting emotions too much, letting your kids be naughty sometimes, you know, not just locking all their anger away completely.
Hmm.
Some pretty cool stuff. There's trouble with parenting stuff, as I've found, as I've researched things and trying to find out if I'm doing things right or wrong, or what is that there's always two sides to everything, you know. So the whole co-sleeping thing, we're not like, we don't have our kids in our bed with us every night, like co-sleeping like that. But if he wakes in the middle of the night and he's not been sleeping well and he needs to go to sleep, one of them, we'll just let him sleep with us. It's like, that's it, just go for it. But then I've read an article the other day saying that co-sleeping is really bad for marriages and for the future of your child's well-being.
I think that it can be if it becomes a permanent thing. But if you look at any other species, and I think that this is important, if you look at chimpanzees, look at bonobos, you look at any primates, yeah, they live in a way that isn't that different to how we would have lived.
Yeah.
You know, we look at hunter-gatherers, but very often people in the nest cuddle up together to keep warm. Yeah, it's shared body heat.
Yep.
And when you're in that kind of situation, the idea that you need to kind of have that security of touch, of being with other people, is quite important, which is why kids have teddy bears. The reason kids have teddy bears is because they've got a surrogate other person that they're cuddling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same thing.
Yep.
And we need that kind of stuff in it. And there's nothing wrong with the kids climbing into bed with you sometimes and cuddling. That's okay. Yeah. If it gets to the point where it starts to affect your other relationship, then it needs to be changed around a bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we need to be much looser. I hate it when you have children that are kind of locked in a room and they have to cry themselves to sleep because it's good for them.
Oh yeah.
And I think, no, it's not. That's bad. That's abandonment.
Uh huh.
You know, that is overprotective parenting in a negative way. I am going to do you good.
Mm.
Yeah, that's not good. That's bad. Yeah.
Okay. Parenting, now you could talk about it for hours and hours.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't think that I've been the best parent in the world because I came from the role models I came from were damaged. Therefore, my rolling was damaged until I learned. I think I've learned over time. But you learn on your kids, which takes you back to the Philip Larkin program. They fuck you up, your mum and dad, they don't mean to, but they do. You know, because that's what they're doing. You know, they're doing the best that they can. Yeah, but they can only do the best they can with the knowledge that they've got.
Mm.
And one of the things that I began to realise about my dear old dad was that he was a damaged human being that was passing his damage on to the next generation. But he had been damaged by people who were damaged themselves.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So he was as much a victim as a perpetrator of damagedness.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but the issue of, if you have been over-parented and you been stunted by that, do something about it. Don't put up with it. Go and do something about it. Go and get therapy. Do something. Change it, because you don't have to be like that.
Yep.
And if you are a parent, for God's sake, don't overprotect your children. Allow them to go out and live an experience. And yes, they may get bashed and bruised and may break a few things, you know. And most kids repair. You know, it's okay.
Yes, yeah, because coming up to a year since Will had one of his head bashing incidents where he was hospitalised and
I remember that,
massive scar, which is. You know, still, you can still see in certain light the kind of a line on the side of his head where this where he was stitched up. Yeah, and, he was fine within, well, hours, minutes, hours. He was. I saw him that night because I was out when it happened, and he was fine the next morning. He was like, "Look at my scar, Daddy, brilliant." Whereas everyone else around him, all the parent, me, Beth, and grandparents, were all really worried, like, "Oh my god," really traumatized by it. And he's like, "Yeah, getting on with it, man, amazing."
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I didn't. I tried. I always tried not to be too, like, I don't run to him too quickly when he falls over and stuff like that. I'll just, you know, obviously if he's hurt, I'll go and help him. But otherwise, like, up you get. Let's carry on, you know.
Yeah.
There you go. But maybe I'm doing it wrong.
It's the world is a balance.
It is good fun though. You've talked about your results already, haven't you? I think.
Yeah, I have stuck down on.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I have.
Oh yeah, Susan Jeffers, Feel for You and Do It Anyway.
Yeah, and look at this.
Is your iPad struggling there, Sean?
No, I think I'm struggling with the iPad. There it is. It's the new system on where you can have loads of things up at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, right, I haven't used that yet. Well, you can split screen it.
No. It was that one where you can you're flicking through. Yeah, so which is cool. Oh, done it again.
Shall I mention mine while you find it? Well, mine's actually, I've mentioned, it's that Japanese TV show, which is, I'll link to one on YouTube, and if you look in the sidebar, the related videos, there's loads more if it takes your fancy. So.
My other one is, it's a blog, and it's called My Love Affair with Loose Parts, and it's all about kids and kids being able to play with things that they can move. So it's all about kids building dens and, you know, with sticks and logs and bricks and stones and all kinds of stuff. And it's like being outside and playing.
Yeah,
going out in the world, yeah. So that's a good blog to look at.
Cool. Yeah. I was outside preparing for winter, chopping some wood in the back garden for our wood burner. And I gave Will a little blunt-ish hacksaw.
Yeah.
Gave him some little sticks. He was there. He was there for hours, loving it, man, with his hacksaw, and managed not to chop any of his fingers off.
I had Danny, not Danny, Josh had a little hand axe, and
cool.
it wasn't sharp enough to chop his toes off. And he used to chop up the kindling, and I'd do the
Bear Grylls, adventure survivalist dude. He makes a point of making sure all his kids lads have pen knives, and he says, you know, a blunt knife is a lot more dangerous than a sharp knife because you kind of learn to respect it quicker. And but Will, man, Jacob will get there too. I feel sorry I never talk about Jacob, but Will just loves being given tasks to do. As soon as you give him a job to do, he's in the zone, man. So he's getting that independent streak already. Hopefully, right. Okay. Well done. I'm not sure what we're talking about next week. I haven't thought that far ahead, but it will be delightful, wonderful, a journey like you've never known, won't it?
It always is.
livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links. Share this show with a pal if you can. We really love it when we hear from you and when we hear people online talking about the show. And if you can share it with far and wide, that'd be magic.
And Carrie, if you're listening to this and you need any more help, advice, anything, just email in and
Before this goes out, I'll send her a message, so I would have spoken to her, but I'll send her your way and hook you up. But same goes for anyone else who's listening. If we can help in any way, drop me a line, or not me, drop Sean a line.
Oh, you can drop
me a line first, and I'll I'll okay it, and then see if Sean's worthy. Cool. Are we all done?
That's good. Yeah, I'm groovy.
Sure.
I'm good. Yeah.
You have a good one.
And you.
See you all soon.
See you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.